Hi, today's November 6th, 2022. This is Mobile View Podcast 429. I've got a little rant. I like to think of it a caring rant. Let's call it a caring rant. That I'm going to call the need for certified minimally viable end users. But before that, a couple of things. So, you know, when I was getting ready to, as I'm setting up my tiny, and it is tiny, it's just on a little folding table that's unfolded, that's been holding up my, from Costco, that's been holding up my iMac since 2008. And I moved out the iMac after backing it up and the external screen, and I put my new stuff on there and been setting up for general purpose use, you know, with Raspberry Pis and Windows and whatever, Chromebooks. And one of the things I found was a USB tester I bought a couple of years ago, a USB-C tester a couple of years ago, when, you know, there was a whole brouhaha about USB-C damaging equipment and so forth. I think we talked about
when USB-C had so many incompatibilities.
Yeah.
You know, now we've gotten to a good place where pretty much any USB-C cable will do what you need it to do. But at the time, you had to have very specific cables to get things done.
Yeah. So I bought this USB-C tester. It was really inexpensive. I think it was like $15 or something. And it was great. And, you know, that, like you said, that concern kind of dropped away, you know, and became less of an issue. And I put it away, forgot about it. So as I was reorganizing, cleaning, I found it and said, wow, you know, I've got like a ton more USB-C based equipment now than I did several years ago. So I started plugging it in and looking at how batteries charge, you know, how the... especially since only my Android Pixel, I think, tells me when it's doing a rapid charge. Everything else, it does do rapid charges, but it doesn't tell you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a nice way to take a look at, you know, how many volts and amps are coming through. And you can tell by how the amps start decreasing, the amps that are actually passing through the device decreasing when your device is charged, even if your device doesn't have a charge like the iPhone and iPad, right? How do you know when it's done except by looking at the percentage? Well, you can actually see it if you've got a USB-C tester multimeter. At any rate, I liked it so much that I decided it's a grayscale LCD. So I said, I really need one in color.
So
I think I paid a whole $18 or thereabouts. And I got the same brand because I'm really happy with that brand. And it's in color and it is awesome. And I just want to say that if you have USB-C devices and you're just kind of interested in how, you know, how it draws, what kind of power draw it actually has when it's charging, and what the rate looks like as it charges. Because it's you can actually see the, well, you can't see the curve on mine, but you could, if you wanted to, you could graph the curve of you know, amps versus time, and see how fast your device really charges on this thing, and maybe how, you know, it changes over time as your battery becomes less healthy. But anyway, I will. I'll put a link to it. I don't have a link to it in our show notes, but I'll put a link to the one I just bought. I really like it. Speaking of batteries, my M2-based iPad Pro, 2022 iPad Pro, has horrible battery. I'm not sure what's going on with this thing. It loses power in airplane mode with Bluetooth shut off. Yeah.
That is bizarre. You know, more and more, I was really sure I was going to buy one of those, and your comments and your annoyances have made me feel really good about not buying one.
I'm kind of annoyed.
Because it seems like you're not getting that, like we talked about before, the idea that you upgrade iPads so infrequently that you really feel a big jump between a 2 or 3 year iPad. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this one has not given you that jump. This one has given you just frustration.
So far, true. And I've put the graph of my battery. And I should note, because I don't, and it's kind of odd, I don't really use my iPad Pro as much as I probably should, because I have other iPads lying around. And so this iPad, you know, I did a daily doodle like Thursday night. And in fact, John can see the graph at the bottom of our show notes. And it finished charging at 9:36 p.m. at 100% Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And the next morning when I took a look at it, I said, hey, it's got like, you know, it's got down to like 70-something percent battery.
Yeah.
In airplane mode, right? And if you scroll down a little bit on activity, you can see the screen was on for 2 minutes. That's me looking at it, staring at it, figuring what's on. And it's like, wow, what is going on? So I still don't know what's going on.
Staring at it in disbelief for 2 minutes.
Yeah. So I still don't know what's going on. I just checked it now. I charged it up last night after I used it, and it's only down to 98%. So I don't know if this is a fluke or what. But I did notice it the other night too. So I need to do more testing of this thing, more monitoring, really, not testing, and find out what's going on. But it's not a happy, I'm not a happy camper. I should also note, speaking of my iPad, so, you know, I traded in, or I tried to trade in my 2020 iPad Pro, non-M based. And you might remember I told you it had a firmware line that sometimes was there, sometimes wasn't. And I got a warranty replacement. And then when the new one came, it did the same thing. I tried to get another warranty replacement. Apple says, no, it's just a firmware thing. So, you know, it's the way it is. Anyway, when I traded it in, they says, you have a screen defect. I said, no, I don't. So they're denying, they've reduced the trade-in value to zero, and they're shipping it back to me, apparently. So not happy with that, Apple. Since, you know, Apple was the one who sent in my second, and I was under warranty, under my second warranty call, I wanted to replace. And they said it was fine, so they're not going to replace it.
Well, it sounds like the hardware that you are dealing with, your disluck of Apple hardware that I had last week has now followed you. because I didn't mention it, but I don't think I mentioned it, that the MacBook Pro that I'm using right now, I had sent in for service. We talked about that. Well, then last weekend, my wife said, you know, the MacBook Pro, your old one that I'm using, it's not sitting flat anymore.
Oh, okay.
And so I opened up the bottom of it, and sure enough, the battery was puffed up. So the same issue I had with that same device 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So it now has a new battery for my fix-it. Try to give it another couple of years of battery life. But so it's just not been a great couple of weeks for Apple hardware and you and I.
Not at all. Not at all.
And I also have a suspicion that something might be a little off on my iPhone 13 Pro just because my cell signal can get a little spotty in places it hadn't before. But that could also just be my local area is having some issues. So don't know. Just kind of, you know, amazed. But I will say I did have a new discovery this week that I noted to you before the show. Apple Watches. So my Apple Watch, I wear it at night, so that means an hour before I go to bed, I put it on charge, and I keep an eye on the charge status from my phone, because, you know, the watch will tell you what the charge is on it, and I do that mostly because I have a cat who likes to steal my watch. I mean, he's a good boy in every other regards, but he's a little thief, and he likes my watch.
Because he wants a watch himself.
He's put a bunch of holes in the solo loop to the point that I had to get a new one because this one's probably going to snap one day because of all these little bite marks in it. But anyway, he'll like to grab it off the charger, so I need to be able to check the charge to see if it's still on there. And one day, a few months ago, I looked, and it wasn't charging. It was, you know, saying it was on charge, but the percentage was not going up.
Right.
Then last night... similar issue, but in this case, the percentage was going down.
Whoa.
I'm thinking, well, how is it that it's on charger, but it's going down? So I went in there, and both times, all I did was use a little bit of Nature's Cleaner, a.k.a. spit, and wipe off the contacts, and all of a sudden, it started working just fine. So Apple Watch chargers apparently can get dirty, and when they get dirty, they do not charge or they discharge. Because you figure the screen, you know, it's trying to charge, but it's just not getting enough power through. So I don't know if it's dirt or if maybe my charger's crapping out, but it does seem to be that if I clean it a little bit, it gets better.
I just wiped mine while you were talking. Because I noticed mine had a little bit of crud on it, too.
Yeah.
So, although I cannot say I've had a problem with charging my watch. And,
or with one of your rabbits stealing it,
because that's also
stealing your stuff.
I do not have a pet who covets my watch or the watch band.
It's probably good.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's not in the show notes. We're speaking of watch bands. So, yay, thanks to Fitbit, who, you know, let me buy a new Fitbit at a 35. John is showing the holes in his watch band. Yes, I do see it. I do see it. So Fitbit shipped and delivered my Fitbit Charge 5 at a discounted price because I had a problem. My display on my Fitbit Charge 4 completely died. Anyway, really happy with the Charge 5 so far, although it does not have a week of battery life, I can tell you. And but that's not surprising. And you know, I don't like, well, I thought I didn't like the bands that come with Fitbits. So When I ordered the Fitbit Charge 5, I also ordered a third-party metal magnetic clasp-type band, which I really like. I've got one on my Apple Watch. I have one on my old Charge 4. The Charge 4 and the Charge 5 are completely different sizes and mechanisms, so I couldn't reuse the band. And so it's not expensive. It's like, I think $12. The last time, $12. This time, different manufacturer. The problem is the new band does not fit on my Charge 5. Well, it fits on one side. In fact, it's too tight on the other one side, in the sense that it's hard to take off. And the other endpoint, it simply doesn't click and stay. So it's useless. You know, they'll get a one-star review in Amazon. But that led me back to the strap that comes with the Fitbit Charge 5. And, you know, I know it's going to break on me eventually, because all of those, what do you call those? They're not plastic, but whatever they're called. All of those bands always break on me, which is why I like the metal ones. And it's surprisingly comfortable, I have to say. It's not uncomfortable. And I just don't think it's going to last very long, more than, mm-hmm. you know, a year or so, which is fine. I'll figure out something by then. Hopefully something I can afford. Getting back to the iPad, the M2 iPad. So I think I will be happier with the iPad, the M2 iPad, once iPadOS 16.2 comes out, because I really want to play with external extended display that only works in M1, M2 iPads. And I suspect it's not something I'll use often. I just want to have, you know, it's just one of the things I just really want to have it. It's like a collector's mm-hmm. thing where you're not going to do anything with it. You just want it.
Yeah.
But who knows? It might be useful. And the thing to note, by the way, John, is, you know, we're talking about external displays on iPad. The current external display technique is a mirrored display. And this is a true external display where you get, two different views on the iPad on two different monitors. So that's what I'm really looking for, the dual display experience on the iPad. I don't know if it's useful. I just want to have it. And the other thing is the Freeform app, which will work on non-M1 devices. In fact, it'll work on a phone. I really want to play with it with you to see what you think about it, you know, from your point of view as a geek and an educator.
Mm-hmm.
To see if you think it's something good. Because I can tell you, Microsoft Whiteboard is really interesting, but it's so abysmally slow to render. Mm-hmm. It's not a good experience, not a good UX. Good UI, not a good UX. Speaking of not good, I just read before the podcast session that Mark Gurman over in Bloomberg is saying Apple's next change for Siri, dropping Hey from Hey's, you know, S-word.
Hey, S-word. That sounds way worse than Siri.
Yeah. So I almost said the word and thought, you know, I have like four devices in front of me that can respond to that word, that trigger word. So I didn't want to say it. Our gal, S, triggers so easily with just the Hey plus the S word or S name. I'm really afraid of how often it's going to, you know, have a false positive and react once it becomes just the S name and not, Hey preceding it, which at least introduces some, you know, sonic complexity to the trigger. I don't know. What do you think? Does yours trigger all the time? Mine does.
Mine does not, but I do have a very annoying issue with S-word, and that is I have one HomePod mini in my mm-hmm. house, mostly just for playing with it and, you know, being able to try out new things with it. But the problem is I will ask S-word for something when I am multiple rooms away, and for some reason it will take the request on that device and then reply on the HomePod, so I can't hear what it's actually saying because it is somewhere far away. So I don't quite know what logic Apple uses to decide what, you know, where to route HomePod audio, but it should stop doing that because it's very annoying.
Yeah. And on the Google side of the world, I don't know how many times where I have, and I do use, you know, Hey G a lot because I have a Lenovo Smart Assistant sitting on my table that is, you know, always listening. But I've noticed that sometimes my old Android Pixel 2A, I think I have, or 3A, I think I have a 3A that's, you know, doesn't have, it's Wi-Fi only now. But it'll show, like, you know, if I ask for directions or something or weather, it'll show the result on the the old phone, and in addition to the smart assistant. So it does it in both places, so not quite as annoying, but it is somewhat surprising. I guess it's a good thing. It shows it everywhere, essentially, where it should. But I'm not in favor of dropping Hey from, you know, Hey's name. We'll see. We'll see. Okay, next, on to my rant. And I've had two instances now, recently, that really kind of triggered this rant with care, you know, a caring rant, if you will. So, instance number one was a person who works in the same organization I do, for some unknown reason, was doing work, you know, on a personal device, which, you know, sure, you know, some, you know, I'll take a call on my phone that's routed from Microsoft Teams, and I will view stuff, you know, my phone or iPad is Microsoft Teams, but I don't store anything on my local device, except in cache, if you want to be, you know, picky about that statement. Well, this person is apparently doing work, you know, like storing documents, and God knows what the security level on it was on his personal device. I think it's a Windows device. And the person's storage went out, probably an SSD. I was going to say hard drive. It was probably an SSD, I'm going to guess. And so SSD flaked out. Might have been a hard drive. Something flaked out. Mm-hmm. And the person didn't have a backup. Like, you know, it wasn't a copy of a work file on a personal device. It was the only copy. And I was like, what?
That just seems bad.
No, especially for an IT professional. And so I just said, well, you know, you don't even get sympathy from me. That was so stupid all the way around. You know, if you're an IT professional, you get very little sympathy from me on stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure you've lost stuff. I've lost stuff because I thought I had a good backup and, you know, I had like backed it up 1 hour before I'd done something. I had, you know, document and next day, you know, something crapped out. But, and, you know, even there, that's my fault, right? I could have done a continuous sync. Although back in the day, I guess we couldn't. It was really expensive back when, you know, we had to pay for 100 megabytes of storage. Okay, so that's story number one, and I have no sympathy for that. But I do, you know, have thoughts about it. Well, most of them not fit for saying out loud. But the other one was not a work person, you know, an acquaintance of mine, friend of mine, who asked for some advice. Says, hey, you know, my heart, who does work on a personally owned device, but is kind of like a outsourced accountant, bookkeeper type person. And the hard drive died, the person's hard drive died. And I said, what kind of, you know, I asked a bunch of questions. Like, do you have any backups? And no. And it's like, wow. Right. And so the person took it to a hard drive, you know, or a special, a local company that, among other things, does hard drive recovery in a, I guess, a clean room type environment. I didn't even know if we had those in Hawaii, but. And basically, they said at the level one they were doing it at, which is, you know, I guess they take it into the room and they clean it or whatever they do to it and take it apart. But, you know, not quite brain surgery level stuff. And said, hey, we can't recover it at this level. And if you want to go further, we can, but it's going to be really expensive. And anybody who's, and I've spoken to several people who've done, you know, clean room recovery, and it's been in the thousands to do a really deep dive clean room recovery. And I asked during the course of the conversation, he said, well, do you have an external drive? And the person said, it is an external drive. I said, you used an external drive for your only copy, you know, of like work stuff. He says, yes. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, okay. I said, don't do that again, you know, basically.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
But, you know, and the person's not an IT person, right? And apparently did not talk to one. And so, you know, in the state I live in, I'm sure the one you do too, a lot of people have to be licensed to and show some credentials and whatever to do a whole host of things, from being a physician to a dentist to a, you know, accountant to a cosmetologist to, you know, acupuncturist, just whole bunch, or a security guard. You have to, in our state, it's called professional and vocational licensing. And, you know, you don't have to, like, show. Well, I don't really know. I've never gone through a PVL, but I think you have to show some credentials. And there are checks on you, you know, if there are any complaints against you and all of that sort of thing, or even legal action against you, which happens all the time, you know, to folks in the various professions and vocations. But people who do work on a computer, not necessarily IT, for other people, like, you know, small business owners, individual you know, outsourced workers don't have to show that they know how to use a computer before they do work for you.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you think about how much trust we put in those folks.
Yeah, and you know, they probably know what they're doing in terms of their particular, you know, specialty, whether it's accounting or whatever, you know, engineering, law. But they may not know how to keep your data safe. And by safe, I don't necessarily mean cybersecurity, although it includes that, but literally, like, make sure that it's there forever in some form that is accessible so that more work can be performed. And so I really think that people shouldn't be allowed to use a computer for business purposes unless, A, or one, they have a professional IT support team, which means you work for a company. You're not all by yourself, usually. With a defined set of processes and practices. Because just because you have IT support doesn't mean they've, you know, done a good job.
So, yeah, unfortunately, that is true.
So, you know, you can say, hey, do you have a disaster recovery and business continuity plan? Do you have a cybersecurity plan? You know, all that kind of stuff, right? Do you have a plan in case you are, you know, the victim of ransomware? All of those kind of best practices. But lacking an IT support team, or at least a good one, you know, you should go through a process to get certified as a minimally viable end user. It says yes.
Minimally viable. I like that.
You like that term?
Terminology.
I'm pretty proud of it myself. We're not asking you to take a technology test, but you know, reasonable checklists like you will not do you know how, but you will have backups. You will have backups that are in multiple formats, including cloud. In a secure fashion. You will need to know what it means to be secure for your profession, because different people have different levels of security. They're required either by law or just by common sense. And you know how to handle yourself in a disaster. And, you know, we're not talking about floods and hurricanes. I mean, literally, my hard drive died. That kind of disaster. Mm-hmm. I don't know, John. It's just, and I've run into this more than twice in the past, but just these are two recent ones, like in weeks versus years. And it's 2022, which I shouldn't hear these stories, but I know they're out there by the dozens and hundreds and thousands. And I'm glad I don't know them all, because I'd be very unhappy for them all. But I think that it's not really a solution. A reduction of the problem is to, like I said, have a legal requirement for a minimally viable end user. you can feed yourself with a spoon.
And I feel the same way that you do, that it's just, it's interesting how people don't really think about when bad things happen, and I think this is only getting worse and worse as we get so used to the cloud and we get so used to the idea that everything is always backed up somewhere. And in reality, that gives us a false sense of security that, oh, it's somewhere, I don't have to worry about it. It might not be somewhere. It might be gone, and you don't want to be the one to have to look at someone who's paying your salary and say, it's gone. And I honestly don't know what people think is going to happen to them if they do that. I don't think it's going to be good for your job. No. And you can't just say, I thought IT had us backed up, because most IT departments make it pretty clear what they're doing and what they're not doing. With their devices, and if it's on your own device, they don't typically have any way to back it up.
So. Absolutely, and a lot of times, even if it's a company or enterprise-owned device, they may provide backup options, but they don't force you to do it necessarily, which I think is a mistake. But I know I've been trying to encourage people, since I don't have the hammer to make them do it, that make sure you synchronize.
Hammer.
Yeah, make sure you synchronize everything in OneDrive for Business. So, I mean, like all the time, every time you open a file, create a file, modify a file, whatever, it just gets saved, synchronized, done. But I know it's not mandated, and it's not what people do. And I know that for a fact.
Well, and for just the, not even disaster, but you were, talking about what IT support doesn't fix.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got a great list here of things. I tell my students, you can be the most articulate and well-educated person, but if the product you're putting out looks like crap, it looks like you just pushed it together at the last minute, no one's going to take you seriously in a business context.
Yeah.
you know, and it's just kind of a rough world where, for example, when students are learning technical research writing from me, I'm a big fan of making sure you have a strong narrative. Because if your writing just looks like a series of bullet points that are in paragraph form, that's not a written report. That is what we've been trained to do for PowerPoint. And we somehow think that that's writing. If you don't transition, if you don't have an introduction, if you don't have a conclusion, that's the difference between someone who looks like they're educated and someone who just knows how to write bullet point items.
And which I love to do, by the way. I love bullet points, as you know. But it's funny, you know, because I had a professor who told me the same thing, you know, obviously many, many years ago. And he told me, you know, because I hate writing, right? I do it a lot now and I've done it a lot for decades, but it was all because of this guy. And, you know, Professor Bill Utall, I remember his name. And he told me, you know, because he knew I just hated writing. And, you know, I would turn in stuff and they'd be correct and everything. But he says, you know, you can do more with this, which is, I think, what you're telling your students. Yeah. And he told me basically the same thing. He says, it doesn't matter how smart you are. Nobody will know it unless you write it down and you write it down well.
Well, and the response I get back from the more dismissive students are nobody notices. And I tell them they notice. They just might not notice consciously.
Yeah. But or they don't say it to you.
I mean, we've talked about Disney in the past. And one of the things I like about Disney as a company is that they do tend to notice details. And that's something that when I look at their products and I look at their work, I am grateful that they tend to notice these things that some people say nobody notices that.
Yeah.
People notice it. They just might not consciously acknowledge it or be aware that they're noticing it.
Yeah. But that's like standing in line.
Or the little things about how the line times are inflated by about 10 minutes on average.
Right.
Because, you know, and I might, if I'm bored when I'm at Disney in a few weeks, I might actually start timing and seeing what the, you know, real time is in line versus where you're at the sign where it says it's a 45-minute wait.
Right.
You know, I'm
kind
of curious how inflated those things are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, give people an experience that they will like versus one that they will just understand.
I think you should crowdsource that study.
You really could. I'll think about an easy way to track it so that I'm not always looking at my watch and pulling up the stopwatch app.
Yeah. In fact, that's one. As I mentioned earlier, it's one of the things I've been doing with the USB-C meter, multimeter. I've been, you know, tracking how long it actually takes to charge and, you know, how many amps it's drawing at, you know, 10 minutes versus 30 minutes into the charge cycle, that sort of thing. I don't have a lot of data yet. I've just started jotting things down. I need to be more. I need to be more organized about how I do this. And at any rate. Yeah, so some of the things that IT doesn't fix, even if you've got a good IT support in terms of keeping you secure and business continuity, that, and the IT people themselves do this, so you know they obviously don't notice it either. Things that drive me nuts, fully justified text in documents. You know, which, unless you are an expert typographer, and very few of us are, I know I'm not, and you know what the difference between kerning, tracking, and leading is, and you know how to do something about it, you probably should not fully justify your text. It's just a really bad idea. And for those who don't believe me, they're actually reading studies on, you know, visual saccades, which is your eyes going, you know, kind of big, going left to right, left to right, while you are reading. You don't continuously move your eyes in one direction. And it shows that, you know, these kinds of fully justified, non-typographically formatted text is much slower to read than just left justified, ragged right. So anyway, things like, and it also looks terrible and drives me bonky, but it mostly slows down, literally slows down my reading, slows down everybody's reading. That's just the way it is. I guess the only time it wouldn't matter is if you have like in Japanese or Chinese, where your text goes up and down, then it doesn't matter which way you left or right.
True.
But you shouldn't center justify the vertical. I'm just telling you. And basically, documents with formatting that looks like a ransom note more than a you know, a report. So say, oh my gosh, you know, where people are copy and paste text from different documents, they don't bother to unify the fonts. So there's like part of it's in Arial and part of it's in, you know, Times Roman, or whatever it's called in Microsoft world nowadays, and part of his Comic Sans, or goodness knows what. And you know, the headings are like inconsistent, and just drives me nuts. And not using bullet points where they're a good thing. And since most people can't write, bullet points are actually good, John, for people who never learn to write a narrative, as you say. In fact, that's why I encourage, on the other side of the college degree, for those, since most folks never learn to write, and they don't, you know, bother to do spell checking or grammar checking or anything else when they really need to, including me. I mean, I make use of it. Bullet points are great because they make it very clear what the three things you want to point out are versus, you know, hunting through five paragraphs. Is this really what you wanted to say? Really? That's what you wanted to say? Okay. Center justified columns of numbers and spreadsheets. I don't know why people do that, but I see it all the time. And I don't get it. The only time I think center justified anything makes sense is poetry, maybe. You know, other than that, I'm not sure what. Also, I don't know why people do this. Well, I know why you do it. It's just not a good idea. People hand over spreadsheets formatted like a report with empty rows and subtotals in between rows and spacing between columns that are unnecessary. And, you know, especially if it goes, you got to scroll left and right just because they added empty columns. And it basically makes it impossible to do further analysis on. And also, most people don't do any analysis in their reports anyway. They give you like totals and every now and then average or something, but nothing I can actually use to do trend analysis or anything. So drives me nuts. And finally in my list, but not just finally amongst my rants, is slides that have like 50 lines of text in multiple columns. You know, basically, there's a rule called 7x7, right? No more than 7 lines of text and 7 words per line. If you are writing more than that, you should make a Word document, not a slide deck.
The only time I will disagree with that is if the slides are given out to be used as reference later. So if someone has it, so if you're using it as a slide presentation where it's literally the person should be listening to you and not, you know, paying attention to your slides, then you're right.
Yeah.
Don't put a lot of words on. Don't put any. But if you're actually giving out something that is a hybrid in a sense where you're going to be walking people through it and then you want them to use those slides later as step by step or something, then I say pack them full because you're not going to read them anyway.
Yeah, if you're not going to read a slide
deck. Reading a bunch of text, then you're fine.
Right, because then people read off of these, you know, dense slides, which makes no sense at all to me. Or the other thing, the other side of that is reading off a slide deck verbatim, word for word.
I tell my students, if you put it on the slides, you don't need to say it. And if you say it, you don't need it on the slides. The only time you would ever say it and put it on is if it's extremely important.
Yeah.
If it is something that you need people to see, because if you put it on the slides, they will read the slides. They don't need to hear you say it. And also be aware that as soon as you put a slide up, you have to pause because people are going to read the slide and they're not listening to anything you're saying for the first 10, 20 seconds. So either pause or restate what you just said after 20 seconds so that when people's attention focuses back to you, they catch it.
Yep. Yep. So at any rate, I have communicated this in my last days to people. I'm sure they're ignoring it, but that's okay. I said my piece. And I will be gone in a few weeks, so it won't bother me anymore.
Yes.
But that said, again, you know, certified minimally viable end user, SMVM. we need a better acronym. But I really think it should be a thing because I really feel bad for people who, well, I don't feel bad for people who should know better and still mess up. I do feel bad for people who are not IT professionals or technologists or whatever you want to call them, and then they mess up just because they didn't know or didn't think it through and nobody talked to them before. Nobody counseled them. An IT counselor. People need an IT counselor.
You know, we need a business intelligence counselor in a sense that can span over all forms of operations, including IT. That needs to be a position other than a consultant.
Yeah. Yeah, and tell people things like, you know, correlation is not predictive information, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. And also, just because you have a regression line doesn't mean it's predictive.
Yep.
But at any rate, I digress as I regress. But yeah, things like that just drive me bonky.
Well, do you want to hear a fun health story?
I do.
So recently, I have gone to the doctor more than I ever had in the past. Uh-huh. Just because I figured I'm getting older, I should establish with the doctor, those sorts of things.
Yep.
So I went for the first time in a long time in September. And I had bought a Withings blood pressure cuff about a year ago because it's one of the most accurate on the market. I liked it. It's Wi-Fi, so you don't have to be paired to any device. It just connects to your Wi-Fi network, sends your stuff wherever it needs to go. So I had been using it, and I went in, and I had the nurse at my doctor's office take my blood pressure, mm-hmm. and it was extremely high.
Oh.
To the point that it was about 30 points higher on the systolic than usual. And
wow,
well, that's not normal for me.
No.
But probably white coat syndrome. Is the first time I'd been here in a long time, you know. Nerves, even if I don't realize it's nerves, it's probably that.
Yep.
So over the last month and a half since visits, because I went in this week for a follow-up to look at blood work, I've been trying to grab a Withings measurement every mm-hmm. couple of days at different times, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they tell you for most accurate, you're supposed to take your blood pressure at a certain time after right. all these other things. But I thought, you know, I kind of want to know at any given time of the day what my average blood yeah. pressure is. So I'm purposefully, you know, with caffeine, no caffeine, after eating, before eating, blah, 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 all that. So I go in and I looked, the nurse, different nurse this time, goes to take my blood pressure. And I said something to him about, well, I hope it's a little bit closer to what I get at home. Because yeah. last time it was really high.
Yeah.
And I think I struck a nerve because yeah. he then launched, as he's taking my blood pressure, into a little bit of a rant, a little bit of Uh-oh. A snarky rant about how people come in and they think that they're supposed to have a certain number, and he hears it, so he knows what it is. And right, what do right. they want? Do they want what he actually gets, or do they want right. their great number that they get at home? Blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Right.
And so I'm kind of listening to this, and I'm just kind of telling him, well, yeah, I understand that, you know, people yeah. want to think this and that. So at the end of the reading, he looks at me and kind of smugly goes, so what do you get at home?
Yeah.
So I pulled out my phone and I looked yeah. and I said, well, I'm averaging. And I told him.
Yeah.
And the look on his face
yeah.
just kind of shattered. Yeah. And all of a sudden it was, oh. And he was off by, I think, 1 point from yeah, where yeah, my yeah, average yeah. was over the yeah. year, over the month.
Right.
And he was just, after that, we had a much more pleasant conversation about fitness tracking and, you know, health devices. And he was asking about my Aura Ring, and we were talking about Apple Watches and stuff like that. But it was just really funny, the idea of, well, what do you get at home? Exactly what you get. Oh, okay. Well, then I guess that's that. You know, it was an amusing way of saying, if you do buy these, and I guess it's good to know, if you buy these things that are supposed to have good accuracy, like the Withings product yeah. is supposed to have, and there are definitely blood pressure cuffs out there that are not very accurate.
Yeah.
But that was my funny connected. And he and I also had the discussion, as you and I have had many times, about when you collect all this data, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
You have all this health data about yourself, right. and what are you supposed to really do with that stuff? And there's really not much that we were saying that you should do with it. But that was my humorous tech story of the week.
Yeah. Although, you know, as you get older, and you are far younger than me, but as you get older, your baseline health does change. You know, things hurt mm-hmm. more than they used to, and blood pressure goes up or down, you know, and eyesight and all of that, and hearing especially.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good to know, to be aware, because especially hearing, I think, because a lot of times loss of hearing is more gradual than one might think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you go through the physiology of the inner ear and all that, you kind of understand why. But it's just something that happens. And so most of us really don't notice that we don't hear as well as we used to. And then we're kind of in denial when people say, did you not hear what I told you? Yeah, I did. You know, but actually, you may not have, for good physiological reasons. It's not that not necessarily you weren't paying attention, although that's usually the case. But the more you realize what your limitations are as you grow older, I think the better off you are in dealing with those limitations, especially hearing, because that's vision. It's obvious, right? If you don't see as well as you do, you really notice it if your glasses need to be replaced or whatever. Hearing is just the world. And I know many people, including my mom, whose hearing loss was somewhat gradual, and they just sort of were in denial, and we got hearing aids and stuff. And then it was at the point where, because the hearing loss had become so noticeable, not noticeable to her, but become so profound, I guess is the word, that when the hearing aid was applied, it's like, oh my gosh, the world is too noisy, turn it off.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to use her hearing aids, which, were not cheap for anybody who's ever had to buy hearing aids. As a result, it became very difficult to communicate with her, in her last years. But it's something. I hope that for those of us who wear earbuds all the time, it's not something that's uncomfortable. And we will notice when, our devices tell us, hey, you've been playing sounds really loud recently. And it won't tell us to go get a hearing check, but maybe that's a good time to go do so. So, I don't have a Withings. I every time I go to a Sam's Club, they have it, a little card for it, but when I pick it up and try to buy it, it's never in stock, which is weird, because you'd think they would remove the cards to buy it if it weren't in stock. But they're stock
just systems. not allowed to go to Hawaii.
Yeah,
any things that just don't come to see you.
So the cuff I have is, it's the accuracy is not a problem. It's the app that's terrible. But it's actually, the accuracy is okay. What I normally get, and I do it different times of day like you do, just to get kind of, not a baseline, but maybe, just sort of a range, is within the range I get at my physician's office. So I'm pretty happy with it from that point of view. And it's an education. It really is.
Yes.
Okay. You got to tell me about your new toy. I see it listed here. And
so I mentioned this, I think, when I backed it. So Popu Music is a company that has these connected musical instruments.
Yep.
And so I bought a Popu Lele back in, I think, June or May. And I played with it a little bit. It's hanging up over here. It's somewhere, at least I can find. But the thing I backed was the Popu Piano, which is now here. I've been playing with it for a couple of weeks. I have to play with it more because I have very much learned that my hands really need to be worked out if I want to be able to ever have a chance of playing a keyboard instrument. But the idea behind it is very interesting to me, that this is a general MIDI instrument. So you can use it with GarageBand. You can use it with anything that supports the MIDI. It's over Bluetooth, so it's nice and wireless in that regard. So I don't know. I think maybe next year. Every year I sort of pick new things that I want to work on. I've been successful at some, not so successful at others. I mean, in that I finish them, because I'm always a big fan of finishing something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, was it useful or not? Some of them were more useful than others. I spent a whole year practicing cursive writing, and my cursive writing did not improve at all. But, maybe next year this will be the thing where I try to get my hand to be able to play piano chords and play these sorts of things. So
now, do you play keyboard before?
Not really. I can punch out a melody, and I know how to read music thanks to past. I played violin very mediocrely in high school and before. I spent about 7 years playing very mediocre violin. And so I can read music, I can count time and all those things, but I just am not very good at keyboard instruments. So I figure I'll try it out. The only problem that I'm curious about is that it does have a chord pad on the left hand, to be able to hit chords easily and hit it in multiple octaves. But I'm curious if I will end up being able to do a lot with my right hand and almost nothing with my left hand. Might have to practice a bit more with that, but it's an interesting idea, and it's very interesting the way they've gamified everything in their app. So if anything, I'll just have fun with it.
So I'm looking at the poppymusic.com website, and they have something called a V-Wave Steel Tongue something drum. I'm afraid to know how to play this. I don't understand. Do you actually play with your tongue, or does it just because it looks like a tongue? I'm hoping you don't play it with your tongue. That does not sound.
I think sanitary. It just looks like it. there's a picture with using sticks, so I'm pretty sure you're using sticks with
them. Okay, and not everything on their site is digital. Like this Ocarina, mm-hmm. Is this Ocarina digital at all? I don't think so. I think it's, which is, you know, not a bad thing. Just find it interesting that they have such a mix, and they have three different smart ukuleles, populeles.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Now you bought one of those too, right? I think you mentioned.
Yeah, I have the it's like the Populele 2, not the Pro version, but it was something I was Populele able to get on 2. eBay used. Let me pull it over here and see if it actually says what it is on it.
Yeah, it looks like
just
a
two. Populele, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it and matches what you're holding up on our video call. And is this thing, it says smart ukulele. So does it like have a digital thing, component? Someplace?
Yeah, the fretboard will light up like this.
Oh, interesting. And it's got a hole at the top instead of the center, which is kind of like the Enya smart guitar. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And they have a V-Wave ukulele. Oh, but that's analog. It's no digital. Okay, so the V-Wave stuff, I guess, is all analog, and the Popu branding is digital. Huh. Oh, and I see their Poputar, their guitar, is also... Yeah, so it doesn't do sound effects or anything. It's not MIDI, but it does have lights so that you can... to guide your fingers. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it has a headphone you can plug in too. Neat. Mm-hmm. Neat. What's a box drum? Oh, I've seen those. Sorry, I'm just getting... I'm doing squirrel on their website.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's things you'll buy soon, because that's things that I mentioned. So
I am going to be a poor retiree, and I'm trying not to buy much of anything anymore. Although this tuner is very interesting. But anyway... Any rate, I'm sure John will give us a deeper dive review of his Popu piano.
If I'm able to do anything with it in a year, if I decide to make this my 2023 project, I will. I'll show it off. And if you never hear from me ever again about it, you can imagine that it's sitting in my closet collecting dust.
Well, you know what? I think your goal should be: are you still doing your vidcasts and podcasts for your students? And
every so often here and there.
Yeah, it's not
on
a regular thing.
Teaching online, yeah.
Yeah, you need a theme song, and you need to play it yourself.
That's true. I do need that.
Yeah. You know, our theme song is I did in GarageBand years and years and years ago. Did I actually use a keyboard with it? I can't remember, but it's mostly just sound effects chained together, but it's still, you know, unique to us. Okie dokie. So that is Moldview's podcast 429. And once again, thank John as we... head into the last weeks of 2022. It's hard to believe. We've only got 7 weeks left. And not to get political, but if you haven't gone out to vote, don't forget to go out and vote on Tuesday, November the 8th. We'll talk to you next time.